What's going on, y'all? Welcome to another episode of the Work to Wellness to Wealth podcast. Listen, I'm excited is an understatement concerning what I'm going to share with you all today. I got not one, but two special guests who are joining me because I have a topic. What we're going to talk about today, specifically for my educators, my teachers, counselors, social workers, wherever you are, but we're going to dig deep into this topic today. Is it okay to be in it for the money? I want y'all to think about that because we always say, well, you know, we're not in it for the money, but do you really believe that? And number one, number two, is it okay to be in it for the money? So that's what we're going to talk about today. But, you know, let me go ahead and do my financial disclaimer so I can bring my guests on because I want to maximize as much time as I possibly can. Let me start by saying I am not a financial advisor, neither are my guests, and the content of this podcast is for educational and informational purposes only and does not constitute financial advice, so don't get that twisted. Your financial situation is unique, so please do your own due diligence, do your own research, consult with a qualified financial advisor, and as always, if you want to learn more about me and what I'm doing, yes, feel free to visit my website at gerardaanderson.com, and you can find out everything that you want to know about me. I am about to bring out my guest. I'm going to let them tell you a little bit about themselves, their journey, their story, and we're going to dig into this question. Is it okay to be in it for the money? Please welcome to the stage my two special guests, Dr. Aisha Stephen and Dr. Marcia Cradle. What's going on, ladies, boy? I'm amongst the heavy hitters today, man. I got two doctors in the house, so y'all know.
That is a mess. A mess.
Cut it out.
So y'all know it's about to get heated in here today, but first of all, let me tell you all, thank you so much for taking time out your busy schedule. I told our audience, we're going to unpack this topic. Is it okay to be in it for the money? But before we jump into that, if you all could just tell the people a little bit about your story, your journey. Both of these ladies are in education, and I'll let them tell you exactly what they do. But both of them also are entrepreneurs as well, which I think is so vital for the time that we're living in. But Dr. Stephen, let's begin with you. If you could just tell us a little bit about your background and even how you got to the place of being a doctor, what you do, and a little bit about your business. And then Dr. Cradle, we'll get to you.
Okay. All right. So first of all, thanks for having me here this evening. So I am Aisha Stephen. I have a doctorate in administration and leadership. I am from Jamaica initially, so all my primary years of education is back home in Jamaica. So from elementary through high school is Jamaica, post-secondary, you know, college is here. Decided to get my doctorate just because of where I'm from in Jamaica. So where I'm from, it would be considered Bankhead, Garrison, ghetto, less privileged. That's me. So the expectation is to not be anything, just be the status quo, you know, be a single mom with multiple children by multiple men, not married, not career driven, no profession. So I chose to go the total opposite route of that. So pursuing my doctoral journey was just that, just something personal for me to say I could do it. And yes, I did it. Choice of education came by way of circumventing the healthcare profession. So if you're from the Caribbean, the expectation is you go into the medical field. So my mom wanted me to be a nurse, started out in nursing, did all the classes, but there was a waiting list to start. So I was like, I'm not waiting to start. So I looked for something that I could transfer credits to that would allow me to continue my educational journey when I got here to the States. And that was counseling. And I know I wanted it to be in something where I'm helping. I love children. That's my passion. I love helping. I'm a servant leader. So that's how I wound up in counseling. And I've been doing that for 2 decades now. So the journey from traditional to entrepreneurship started really and truly during COVID. I'm a counselor by trade and post-secondary strategist. So I was approached to help folks in other states navigate their children's post-secondary plans due to COVID, you know, no school, no interaction with educators per se. So I started that during COVID, you know, helped folks. And they were like, well, how much do I owe you? And I'm like, you don't owe me anything, because I was just helping. And this one lady from New York insisted. Mm. And that's what made me think, well, I can do this. Why not use my skill set and my passion to gain additional income? You know, because as everybody know, educators really don't really make that much coins.
Yeah, we're going to get into all of that. You made so you didn't necessarily start out saying, ooh, I want to be an entrepreneur. It just kind of organically happened from you operating in your passion.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So that's what led me to, you know, being the CEO and founder of my own business, which is Dr. A.C. Stephen Consultant and Life Path Counseling and Consultant, you know, as an educational strategist and college and career specialist and adjunct professor. So I do it all.
Talk that talk, Doc.
Yeah. And, you know, and the mission again, the mission behind that is just to empower students and families and just be a support system behind them towards the complexities of navigating the educational system, you know, just with clarity and confidence.
Okay. So y'all listen now. So you have a resource here. If you need some help with kids navigating life, you know, during and even beyond high school, you have a resource here. I appreciate that. Thank you so much for sharing a little bit of your background and story with us. Dr. Cradle, heavy hitter, talk to us, man. How did you?
And what an act to follow. What an act to follow. I'm sitting here taking notes. I'm like, oh, okay, yes. Well, my story is a little different. Education was my third career, and I've been doing it now for 30 years. I thought about that the other day. I said, Lord, girl, you got children, students, former students who are 30 years old. But yeah, I started out, I went to college and I'm from the metropolis of New Bern, North Carolina. Let me put that out there first.
I always tell the people, metropolis.
You know, the metropolis. Yeah, see if you can find it on the map. That's what I challenge you to do. But I started out, I was a political science major. I had planned to go to law school, had taken the exam, and I was home for a break and started talking to my uncle, my great uncle, who was a civil rights activist. Mm-hmm. And I was telling him, yeah, I'm going to be, you know, going to law school. And he said, so you want to be a professional liar, huh?
Dang.
And I was like, I'm sorry, what? So I said, that it just didn't sit right with me. And no, okay, all the attorneys out there, please don't come for me. I'm just telling you my story. Okay, don't come for me. But I just could, it just didn't sit well with me. And so I floated around. I said, well, I have to have a job, because anybody who knows my daddy, he's a firm believer, if you don't work, you shall not eat. And I like to eat. So I said, I have to do something. So I went into retail management for a few years. I did that and I got tired of the long hours. You know, it's a lot. And so then I worked in the medical field for a few years. I was a transplant specialist for an ophthalmologist. So I did that. And then, you know, my mom, who was an educator, had always told me, you know, you're really good with kids. You should go into education. But I decided, because that's what she did, how could I be an educator? Because I don't want to do that, because that's what she did. But it really is my calling. My specialty is special education with an emphasis in learning disabilities and emotional behavioral disorders. So I'm good at it. And I'm going to jump ahead a little bit. Like Dr. Stephen said, you know, you start looking at the money. And I said, I have to do something to make myself more marketable. And so I can be paid for what I know and for what I do. And so that's why I decided to pursue my doctorate, was to be able to make more money.
Say that again, Doc. You pursued your doctorate not just for the love of it, but You wanted to make more money?
I wanted to make more money.
Okay.
Okay. And because my, you know, I'm going to write a book about all the Zebisms. My dad's name is Zeb. And he one time my brother, you know, we were all having this conversation and my brother said, well, money's not everything. My daddy said, it's not, but it's right next to air. And, you know,
that's right.
It's like, So I knew I wanted to do something that would allow me to be able to make more money. That's how I got to that part. And then the entrepreneurial piece started because I, like Dr. Steven, people would often come to me for advice, for not just about their student, but about them personally. And I found myself giving these things away. I'll have a good friend. I'm not going to call his name. I won't put his name out there. But he, a few years ago, told me, stop giving away your knowledge for free.
Say that again, Doc. Please say that again.
And I listened to him. I said, you know, he's right. You know, people call me and ask me, and I spend all this time and effort helping them, which I don't mind helping. Like Dr. Steven said, I love young people. I love working with them, but I need to be paid for my expertise. And that's how that started. So since I've written 4 books, started a greeting card line, started a conference 7 years ago. And these are things to help me grow my personal knowledge, but also to help other people. So that's my story.
Man, y'all already said so much. Let's go back and touch on 2 things that you said. And we're talking to our educators today. We all educators. A lot of times I've seen over my career is that we tend to devalue ourselves so much. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not guaranteed that everybody's going to see the value in what you do, but that doesn't mean you have to devalue yourself.
Correct.
But Doc, to your point, you said it's okay to help people. So we're not saying that it's not okay to help people, but it's also okay to be paid for your expertise.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is so vitally important. You know, it's a mantra amongst educators that, you know, well, we're not in it for the money. And so I want to just pose that question to you all. I guess the first question is, why do you think we say that? Because in the way this whole conversation came about, something triggered that question in my mind about the importance of money, because I've been in the financial space for a little while now. And I just realized money is at the intersection of every aspect of your life. I don't think there's any way that you can go anything that you do that money is not going to play a role or be a vital part of that equation. And so I was just thinking, even from a working standpoint, I remember saying myself, it's just like, well, you know, I didn't get into this for the money. But then I had to be real and it's just like, but if they remove the money from the equation, then you can pretty much X me out the equation too, because I need my money. But let me throw that out to you all. Why do you think we say that we're not in it for the money, knowing that on some level we are?
That's what's ingrained in us. Mm. People are, you know, people tell you that all the time. Well, you know, educators, you should just love children and you shouldn't expect to, you know, get rich from doing this. But there's some authors, some educational authors that I know that have gotten very rich based on their educational knowledge. And so, like you said, there's not many things that you can do that don't involve money. Go to see the person who holds your mortgage and tell them you can't pay your mortgage because you love children and you didn't get paid.
To what Dr. Cradle said, it's the mindset. It's almost as if we're conditioned and programmed to think that if you're in education, mm-hmm. you should not be paid. The expectation is that you take whatever the pay scale is. But if we look at it, every other profession is paid accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's based on your experience, your skill set, mm-hmm. your credentials. Mm-hmm. And like you said, Anderson, you have to know your worth and your value. So if you don't put value on yourself, why should anybody else value you?
You have to know your own worth and your own value. Mm-hmm. And so I think what has happened, because people have treated our profession like it's not worth the same as a doctor or a lawyer or an athlete. We began to internalize that message about ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so if I'm only willing to pay you pennies on the dollar, then that must mean that what I do is only worth penny on the dollars. And we've Correct. Accepted that narrative, and that's what we have to change. So mm-hmm. I'm gonna just put the question out there so we can answer it, and then we'll go on from there. Is it okay to be in it? And let me be specific, to be in education for the money. Yes. Dr. Stephen, go ahead and give me your take on that, and then Dr. Yes. Cradle, and we'll move on.
Yes, yeah. absolutely.
And I'm gonna play the advocate here. But Dr. Stephen, what do you mean? You're supposed to do it because you love the children, not for the money. It's for your care and compassion for
yes,
the children.
Yes, but all that love and care in the world. When I come home and flip my light switch, I need to be able to see it go on.
Correct.
Point blank. You know, and as educators, we're in this space of scarcity in our mindset and limitness. Like, we can't do anything. You know, basic stuff. You have to do put up a GoFundMe, create a registry to get supplies for your classroom. You know, I have a running joke that counselors are part of sanitation because we're not included in anything. But once the crap hits the fan, everybody's trying to find a counselor to fix something. So, you know, it's that goes across for educators. It's like, we're not valued, but the minute something goes awry or something needs to be fixed, the teacher is being called because the grade, you know, and little Johnny and the 1 point and the 2 point, and they're not going to graduate because of the credits, but there's no value in making sure that we have the resources and the supports that we need to execute our jobs accordingly.
That's and you said something powerful right there when you, the R word, resources. You know, I saw over as we were coming back to school in the fall, and you know, like Dr. Stephen said, people were putting up, you know, GoFundMe. They were doing Amazon pages, asking for donations for their class, and people had the unmitigated audacity.
Come on now with them big words, Doc.
that thing, as one of my girlfriends says, it pinched my liver. When people say, well, you should have thought about that when you were taking those vacations this summer. What? What? You mean you expect that teachers work all year and they can't use their money to go on vacation because they're trying to make sure that your student has pens, pencils, crayons, backpacks, wipes?
Which is not our responsibility. That's your Correct. Responsibility as a parent. So the gall yes. of you to think that the school should provide those things mm-hmm. for you, those are your children.
And to think that I can't take a vacation because I'm in education, that's ridiculous, you know. And for someone to even form their lips or put their fingers on that keyboard to type that is just ludicrous to me. It's just ludicrous.
If you're not careful, you'll believe that mess.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, people are like, well, why do they need all that tissue? Because when cold season starts, your kid comes up to my desk and doesn't just get one tissue. They get six every 30 minutes. They're back to get more tissue. So, yeah, you need to send some boxes of tissue to the classroom. The pencils, I don't know, they get legs and walk away. And now the kids don't even want like regular, like what the pencils we use. No. They want mechanical pencils.
You know, so realistically speaking, we can't live a sustainable life without money. Like you said, Cradle, it's right up there with air. So yeah. we have to move away from this continuous narrative that we shouldn't be in it for the money.
So let me ask you this. Can you get to the point where you have too much money? It's just like you're desiring too much now. It's just like you need to put a cap on it. Can you have too much?
When you I know. Get there, I'll let you know.
And so I ask that because we want you all to take these self-imposed limitations off of your mind. Mm-hmm. It's just like, think about how important the work that we do is. The mm-hmm. foundation of this whole world is built on education. Imagine that doctor, that teacher, that lawyer had to be taught by somebody. And we're pretty much the foundation for this whole world, if you really think about it.
Right.
So you really have to realize you're worthy of the money.
Yeah.
Even if you're not getting paid it and other people may not see it, we don't want that to be an excuse for you, number one, to devalue yourself. But number two, don't let it be an excuse for you not to pursue what you're worthy of. So if you need somebody to just flat out tell you, you are worthy of the money, all of it, as much as you can get. I heard this guy say, you'll never hear someone say, well, you trying to be too healthy. Like, can you have too much health? And I mean, we want to be as healthy as we can. So why not be as wealthy as you can? So you can teach more people, you can help more people. And I think the sad reality is that for many people, their jobs are a source of stress, worry, care, and anxiety. And it's almost like you get to a place that I have to make a decision between working to pay the bills and my own livelihood, my own health, and my own well-being. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people are just trading in their quality of life because they don't think that there is another way of possibility. So I want to put myself in the mindset of those people, and I want to pose these questions to you all. So for the person that says, well, what do you want me to do if my job is only going to pay me this much? And what do you want me to just quit my job and go and try to start a business? I got responsibilities for. So for the person in that mindset who's listening to this, Dr. Crate, I'll give it to you first. What would you say to that person?
First of all, don't quit your job.
Say that.
Don't quit your job. Don't you go tell anybody that me, Dr. Stephen, or Mr. Anderson said that you should quit your job. That don't do that. But what I would say to you is to find your niche. And I know that sounds a little cliche, but find, what are you good at? What are you good at? What comes natural to you? What do you already do that you can monetize? So and it doesn't have to be school related. Mm. We know people who are educators who have t-shirt businesses. Okay. If you're good with that cricket and can peel with the best of them, start, do that. If you are a baker and every time you have an event, people, you know, at school, because we love to eat at school. I'm gonna tell you that right now. So every time there's an event, they say, well, we can ask, you know, Dr. Stephen bakes the best pound cake in the world. Let's get her to bring a pound cake. Okay, that might be your business. So find something that you're passionate, not that you're not passionate about education, but something else that you can do to supplement what you do in education. And at some point you may be able to just walk away. And there's nothing, and we should, the narrative should not be that we're selfish if we walk away.
To add to that, Anderson, you mentioned something about stress. And I wanted to touch back on that because there are several studies out there that, you know, it's founded that anxiety is very high for educators, and it becomes even that much higher when you start linking or using a teacher's performance to determine how much they get paid, because ultimately stress levels are going to increase. That's going to start impacting, you know, student outcomes and relationships. So it's like, is this cycle of continuous madness? So I just wanted to touch back on that. But to go back to your question and what Dr. Cradle said, you know, in addition to finding out what, you know, following up on what you're good at, ask your friends, ask your families, because they see things in you that you're good at that you don't necessarily recognize that you're good at. Mm-hmm. So, for example, I have friends who never thought of doing event planning. But when we have an event, you know, they're the ones that thinking about decoration, where to put what. And that has actually sparked a business for that educator. That's doing awesome. Exceptionally well. So not only what you see yourself being good at, but ask someone else, what do you see as my strengths? And that creates a balance between the stress that you face as an educator, but what you enjoy doing outside of the schoolhouse.
That's good.
That's good. I was questioning if I was going to go ahead, but I'm going to go ahead and go ahead. It's something that we're going to have to expose to. So to your point, we talked about there's so much more on the inside of you than just that one thing mm-hmm. that you went to school for. Like Dr. Cradle, you said, you know, t-shirt businesses, you got authors, you got speakers, you got so many other different talents. So here's what I found out. The way that our educational system has been set up, it pretty much puts you on the pipeline to only do one thing. So in mm-hmm. other words, you go to school, you get your education. Now you have to get a specific major in one specific area. And so it kind of, you may have a skill set here, but you got to declare a major. You got to bring some focus to, you know, what are you going to study? And then after you get that degree, you get that job in that particular area. And basically that programming tells you that this is who you are now. You are a school social worker. You are a counselor. That's your identity. That's a part of your purpose in life. And then it tells you that's all that you're qualified to do. So you got your degree in education. So you better be working in education for the rest of your life. And it really shuts down you being able to tap into the creativity of being an author, being a speaker, being a shirt designer. So we have to address that part of the program mm-hmm. too. You don't have to be limited to your degree. You don't have to be limited to your job title. And you don't even have to be limited to your current level of pay, but it's going to require you to start to think differently than the group think of just get your education and do that one thing for the rest of your life. What are your thoughts about that?
I think you should definitely not limit yourself. Because like all of us have gifts, and notice I said gifts with an S. So if we only had a gift, then yes, we would be an educator and that's what we do. But see, being an educator is what I do, is not who I am.
Say that.
That's what I do. I am an author, a motivational speaker, a greeting card designer, a professional development facilitator. I am so many things. So don't, for anybody who's listening, do not limit yourself. And I really like what Dr. Stephen said about asking your family, you know, do next time y'all get together to have, you know, Sunday dinner, Dr. Stephen and her family taught me and my husband how to play domino. When you sitting there playing domino in between the smackdown, because I learned how to do that. You know, you got can't just put them down nice.
Do it with an attitude.
You got to do it with an attitude, okay? Next time you'd be like, well, what you see me doing besides whatever? And your family and friends are usually some of the most honest. They'd be like, well, girl, I've been waiting for you to ask me that question. I wanted to tell you. So, you know, you have to have a circle around you who's willing to tell you some things that you might not necessarily want to hear at that particular moment, but they're honest enough with you to say, hey, listen, stop giving, you've been baking cakes for them people at that school for 5 years. Every time you bake a cake, that's $45, $50. So think of all the cakes you've made. Or every time there's an event, you make the t-shirts and nobody even says, here's $5 to help with the supplies. Think about that. So we have to start asking ourselves those questions and being willing to step out there and do something that it might not work the first time. And I used to tell my students all the time, one of my stories was, have you all heard of the cleaning product Formula 409? And you know, they're like, oh yeah, yeah. Well, they call it 409 because he tried 408 other formulas before that one worked. So you got to try some different formulas sometime. That's okay. You know, and if your friends say, well, girl, I thought you were baking cakes. I was, but I don't like that no more.
And that's the thing. We tend to get so, I didn't mean to cut you off, but we tend to get so locked into things and crippled by it. Part of growth is trying and realizing that didn't work. Let me try something else. And it comes from the mindset, because we have this fixed, limited mindset that we're just supposed to do 6:30 to 2:30, 9 to 5, whatever that looks like. So that's the fixed poverty mindset that we have. We have to think growth. We have to think expansive. We have to think a wealth mindset. You know, money is the source, but money is also the resource. So that's shifting how we look at things and approach things. You know, look at the relationship that you have with money. If you feel like you just, all the money you need is just to pay your bills, pay your mortgage, buy food, and do that cycling continuum, that's a fixed mindset.
And you have to be willing to take a chance on yourself. That's so important. What would you all say to the person who is like, okay, I hear what you're saying, and it's true. I just lack confidence in myself and my ability to be able to step out. Or you just have devalued your self-worth for so long, you don't even really think that you're worth that. So for that person who's struggling with their self-esteem, or like, well, Dr. Cradle, you can do that because you're Dr. Cradle. You know, we always see the other person as being so much bigger than we are. So it's easy for you. So for that person who may have had those thoughts of doing said thing, but they just are afraid of failing, or they just don't have the self-confidence to believe that it'll work, what would you say to that person?
I would say to them, you need to surround yourself with some people who are going to encourage and push you. That's one. Two, get yourself a notebook and start writing down all the things that you do and do well. Write it down. You'd be surprised at how much we as people do. And we do it because, like I said, we're good at it and we don't even think about it. So start writing that stuff down. And then the next time somebody says something, you can say, well, hold on. I see, because I got mine right here. I have receipts. On January the 19th, I was on a show with I was up there talking about what I can do. And I provided this information, that information. So you have to, and it can be difficult, especially if you are not used to someone encouraging you. But, you know, with the way our smartphones are now, you can get some applause on your phone. And every time you do something, hit that button. Cheer for yourself.
Yeah, definitely. Do a self audit. Do a self audit. What is it that you want for yourself? A self audit. And like, you know, I mentioned before, just do an assessment of your mindset. You can't take care of anything else until you realize where you are mentally.
Dr. Stephen, even as you continue on your entrepreneurial journey, and I'm kind of thinking about a comment you made before we came on live, but have there been any obstacles or things that you had to overcome, even in terms of your level of comfort or maybe a little bit anxiety of doing certain things to help you get to that next level? Any personal things that you can share that you've had to overcome? So yeah, I don't think that we're just doing this like they look at me and just like, oh, but you on social media all the time. And you know, that's just naturally your personality, but it don't start here. And we getting better as we go. But Doctor, what are some things that you've had to overcome?
The self-talk. You got to be your own cheerleader. You have to be your own cheerleader. So you can't, the confidence start with courage. I hate public speaking, and I used to always say I hate public speaking, but now I find myself doing that. And that's an additional stream of income for me. Something that I thought I wasn't good at, but I consistently heard that from others. But you're good at that. And that's just because I locked myself into when I do presentations for work. I thought that's the only space that I could do that in. So you have to start believing in yourself, and the confidence comes with the courage. Self-talk. You have to be your own cheerleader. And if you mess up on one thing, that doesn't mean that's the end of it. You just do it again.
Listen, my husband and I went to see Stevie Wonder back in October. And, you know, he has a catalog of I don't know how many songs. And he was up there singing. And, you know, we, the audience, we sing the words. And he sort of, you know, messed up. He went through the whole song. And at the end, he said, yeah, I know I messed up, but I got a lot of songs.
We just got to own it sometimes and keep it moving.
Okay.
You're a human being. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're going to mess up. And that's okay. And like Dr. Stephen said, you got to cheer for yourself. When you look at athletes, and I want the audience, the next time you see an athlete, especially basketball, because you can see, when you see them go to the free throw line, look at them and see if they're, some of them are like, you're going to see their mouth. That's self-talk. They're talking to themselves saying, I got to make sure my elbows are close to my body. I got to keep this. I got to do that. I'm going to make this shot because I'm going to have the game winning free throw.
Man, that's so good. And I just want to highlight what you said. We got to get over this fear of messing up and making mistakes. And I think, and I talk to students all the time, they really pick this up in schools. It's like you feel embarrassed that first time you don't get the right answer or your classmates laugh at you. But we're just here to let you know that that's a part of the journey. That's a part of the learning curve. I even heard somewhere, mess up as often and as quick as you can, but learn the lesson and move on so you can get to that next place. So to you who are afraid, like, what if it doesn't work? It might not. What if I make a mistake? You more than likely will, but that's a part of the learning journey. Mm-hmm. And, you know, where you start at doesn't determine where you're going to end at. And well, I had just
living testament. Living testament.
Yeah. And I'll tell you just a quick summary of my story. So I got laid off of my first job after 2 years. And so coming from a family of educators, I was really sold on education is the only way. And just like your whole life is going to be built on this path. So when I was dealt that blow early that, dang, number one, I got my master's degree, but I'm making $23,000. And number two, I get laid off from that job after 2 years. It just kind of caused my whole paradigm to crumble because it's just like, well, this wasn't supposed to happen. So what am I supposed to do now? But somewhere in that period of time, I had the idea to write a book just because I saw a lot of students that I had been dealing with over the years, dealing with identity issues. And I never saw myself as an author, never wrote a book before. And I talked myself out of that for almost 2 years. And as clear as we're talking, it's almost like I heard God said, man, just write the book. And it started with, I like, okay, where do I start? Start with the acknowledgement page. And, you know, that's what I did. I was just like, well, I like to dedicate this book to my mom for instilling in me. And I started there. And then I wrote the back cover. And then on the passage in the course of time, I had a whole book. Mm-hmm. Well, after I finished the book, people wanted me to come speak. So about the book. Mm-hmm. So now I'm speaking. And then I had the idea, oh, man, well, maybe I can do a course on some of the stuff in the book because I'm still working full time. So I said all of that, just writing an acknowledgement page took me down the pathway of being a speaker, creating courses, even where I am now, have a clothing line, doing this podcast. And I would say all of that started with simply writing an acknowledgement page. So we just want to tell you all, just get started with whatever you are, because you've got so much on the inside of you. All right, so we're about to wrap up, man. Can y'all believe we already almost 40 minutes into this conversation?
That's a good conversation.
Yeah, so as we get ready to wrap up, I just want you all to share any parting words, anything to encourage, again, that educator, that teacher who has been devalued, underpaid for so long, but they didn't think that there was a better way. And if you could maybe address this in your closing comments too, because let's be honest, if as a CEO, if you had employees, you're going to base what you pay that employee based on something. And I'm sure it's never enough. Like, even if I had to hire someone, they probably would, well, man, you know, I would like more than that. So what would you say to that person whose job doesn't pay them what they want or what they're worth, but who have decided to settle for that?
So I want you to remember one thing. Like my daddy says, money ain't everything, but it's right next to air.
Yeah, I remember that.
Two, use the current job that you have as a stepping stone.
Ooh, so important.
Use it as a stepping stone. So if you're like most of us, you need a little insurance, you know. So if the job provides you with that, you know, think of that piece. Okay, I can have insurance. I can do this job during the day, but then in the evenings and on the weekends, I can do what I really love to do. And so I would say to you, first, believe in yourself. Cheer for you. Bet on you. Okay. Cheer for you, bet on you, believe in you. That's three things. Cheer for you, bet on you, believe in you.
That's good.
Okay. So when you do those things, use what you have for right now as a stepping stone to get to where you want to be. This where you are right now is not the end of the story. It's just a chapter.
Oh, that's good. And Doc, let me interject, Doc C, before you give your final comments. A part of that is figuring out where do you want to go? Because a lot of times someone told you that your end destination was just working this job for 40 years until you retire. So you're going to have to take some time out and think, what do you want your life to look like? What type of lifestyle do you want to live? And even before you entertain your current level of pay and like, well, why should I even think about that? Because I'm only making this much money. No, prioritize what you want first. And then we can kind of figure out what steps do we need to take to make it happen. And like Dr. Cradle said, your current job or employment should only be a stepping stone to the greater things that you desire for your life. But you got to start thinking about those greater things. Dr. Stephen, what you got for us? Last, your parting words?
Everything that Dr. Cradle said, but I'm going to always come back to your values. Be clear on what your values are, because if you're not clear on what your values are, you will always waver. You'll always waver because that ties into your value. Also, do what is your life ecosystem? What is important to you? What do you want your life to look like? What are the critical keystone areas of your life? And what do you want to leave for your family?
That's good.
It's so much bigger than you. That's good. Yeah.
You know, just look ahead. We have to get from this limited sight that we have. We have to have foresight and perspective. We have to be able to see clearly. You know, Jamaicans have this thing that you're robbing Peter to pay Paul, which is the equivalent of living paycheck to paycheck. We have to get out of that thought process. I was tired of robbing Peter to pay Paul, you know, that's not a good place to be.
Right.
So we need to have multiple streams of income. You know, wealthy folks do it. Why can't we?
All the time.
All the time.
Oh, man, that's so rich what you said. So we need to start prioritizing creating wealth, not for, just for us, but even for the next generation. Ownership is going to be, I've been really looking at this a lot lately. And one of the things, and I'll specifically say for our community that we struggle with, is this, that we just don't own enough. You know, you have to do what you got to do, but because we don't own a lot of the systems that impact us, it's like we have to do certain things out of dependence on the people who own the system. So ownership, number two, we got to get out there and earn and own more. And then number three, we got to get back to supporting each other.
I was just getting ready to say that. We stop. I know we said we're going to wrap it up.
I know.
I have to do a part two.
All right, good. We go ahead. We good.
Stop with this foolishness of, oh, well, they didn't give me good service. You didn't stop going to, I ain't going to say the name of the place because I'm not giving them no free advertisement. You didn't stop going to that restaurant because they gave you bad service. You went back the next time and you just said, well, oh, last time I was here, y'all didn't treat me good, but you came back. Stop doing that. If the person is not providing the type of service that you would like, did you tell them? And that doesn't mean you have to be rude. You can just say, hey, listen, the last time I was here, my chicken didn't taste like you had seasoned it the way you did before. Let somebody know. But we have to support each other. We can't expect others to support us if we're not supporting us. That's all. I'm like Forrest Gump. That's all I got to say about that.
We have to set financial goals too. That's a critical part of it. Set financial goals, you know, just, you know, you said it on the front end, Mr. Anderson, you're not a financial advisor. Do your due diligence based on what works for you in terms of investment, 403B, you know, Roth IRA, whatever it looks like. We have to start somewhere. Mm-hmm. And we have to stop. Well, I can't do this because I don't have enough money. That's that scarcity mindset that we have.
Yeah.
Pull together and invest.
I was thinking that same thing, Dr. Stephen. Get with some of your, that's what, and I can't think of the name, but there was a group of young men in Ohio, and they each committed to putting a certain amount of money every week into a pot. And then they used that and bought like a whole block of property, refurbished it. And now they doing the darn thing. So don't be afraid to, you know, you have to find someone, you know, that you can trust, but find some people that who have that growth mindset like you do, and, you know, put things in writing, because we don't want no problems in these streets. Put it in writing what you're going to do.
You have to know your goals.
Yeah.
Because no man is an island. Remember that. You can't do this alone. No matter how you think you got it together. You cannot do this alone. No man is an island.
Woo! Okay. So there you have it, y'all. So listen, we can change our narrative. So let this podcast, let this episode serve as the catalyst for us to begin the process of changing the narrative for our community, and share it with as many other educators as you can, because this world is built on the foundation of what we do. Before we close up, just in a vein of support, how can the people find you, Doc? I know you have, Dr. Craig, you have a conference coming up. If you are, well, it doesn't matter where you are, but if you are a sister and you're looking to get some encouragement, and, you know, you heard what we said and you're like, okay, we gave you that spark, but you need a little bit more encouragement. Dr. Cradle has this conference coming up in March that she's about to share with you. And also tell the people how they can connect with you. And, about anything that you're doing, and Dr. Stephen, same with you.
Sure. The conference is March 7th through the 9th here in Metro Atlanta, in Duluth, to be exact. It's at the Embassy Suites. You can find the tickets for the 7th annual. Yes, 7. And if I should have made a video from when I first started. I started from the bottom. Now I'm here. That's what I want to tell people. But we've grown so much, but every year it's impactful, insightful, informative, and fun.
What's the name of the conference? Tell us the name and what it's about.
It's the 7th annual Sister Circle Summit, and our theme this year is Sisterhood Unleashed. And it was developed out of a need for women to have a safe place to talk about some of these very things. And also to make sure that we get our mind, body, and spirit right. So that's what we talk about. We bring in people to talk about finances, your mental health, your physical health, your spiritual health, all of those things. Because when you have those things in order, it makes it easier, not easy, but easier to pursue the things that you're passionate about. And a couple of years ago, we added a red carpet gala. And so that way men can come too. So he's not getting out of this, y'all. We're going to expect Mr. Anderson to be there. So he can come to the red carpet event on Saturday night. Pictures. I mean, it's like you on the red carpet for real at the Oscars. Okay. So really just an opportunity to get with other women, to network and grow and learn all during a weekend. But people make connections and friendships that have lasted through the years. So we look forward to seeing you. You can go to, like I said, Eventbrite, and it's the 7th annual Sister Circle Summit, or you can go to my website, which is www.cradleconsulting.com, and click on the events landing page and get your tickets.
All right. So you all make sure to you go and support my sister out there for that event. And she gave you all the information that you need. Dr. Stephen, talk to us. What you doing, and how can the people connect with you?
So if you're trying to get in touch with me, you can visit my website also. It's dracstephenconsultant.com. I'm a retreat planner also, speaker sessions. I do workshops. I help with post-secondary support, transitional help. So all things, you name it, I do it. So if you need me, Dr. AC Stephen Consultant.com.
All right.
There's no S on Stephen, y'all.
There's no S on Stephen. It's S-T-E-P-H-E-N.
Yes.
No S on Stephen. All right. Well, ladies, thank you so much, man. This has been such an uplifting and empowering conversation for
me. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for helping me unpack this. And so, as always, make sure you plug in every Monday night, Work the Wellness, the Wealth Podcast. And I'll see you next week for another episode. All right. Y'all have a good day.
Have a good one. Good night.
Bye.